And now, the continuing story, As the Worm Turns, the story of life today in a big city hospital, the joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements, a million souls yearning to breathe free, and brought you by Scott No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children to protect them from scratches and bruises. You may recall yesterday that Dr. Andrew Kaiser Cunningham III, who's the eye, ear, nose, and throat man at Big City Hospital, received a visitor, a young lady he had not seen for 38 years, Miss Scarlett Beauregard Taliaferro Calhoun Stewart. It was back in Meridian, Mississippi, when the young doctor was working part-time at a cotton stuffing factory where he stuffed little bits of cotton on the end of sticks. As today's story opens, we find ourselves once again in the office. Miss Scarlett and Dr. Cunningham are chatting now and talking about the old days. Let's listen, as Miss Scarlett says.
Those were wonderful days. The old days were the happy ones, Dr. Third. But...
Miss Cunningham...
Well, your sign says Dr. Cunningham III. I thought maybe you'd changed your name.
I've forgotten. I am Kaiser Cunningham.
Oh, yes. How could I ever forget you?
Remember you used to call me Andy in the old...
Yes,
room.
I...
Yeah!
Andrew! Andrew, please.
I can't see a doctor.
What is the matter?
I've got this terrible sinus condition.
Would that my problems could be solved with pills and medication.
No, don't cry,
my problems go much deeper than that, Andrew. You know I don't cry often. I'm a proud lady. We proud ladies don't cry.
Here's my handkerchief. Blow your nose.
Thank you, doctor.
Oh.
I appreciate that.
I think that helped a little, didn't it, Miss Scarlett?
I think so. But you see, do you remember my husband, the late Ashley Belmont Dulaney?
You mean Ashley is...
Yes, he's gone.
Well, how did it
happen? He cut out.
How did it happen, I asked?
Oh, it was a sad story. First of all, Ashley was a go-getter. Ashley always had a big deal just around the corner.
He was pretty fancy with a bottle, too, if I
remember. Yes, he was. He cut a
man. Cards, booze, and women.
And he took all of my money for what he thought was a worthwhile venture.
What venture was that?
He was going to get a Wall Street Journal franchise in Russia. And he went over there.
Yeah,
and as you might guess,
the wheeze is coming back again.
It laid a big egg. It bombed, I think is the expression.
Excuse me just a few minutes. Nurse Nadine, bring me a pill.
Yes, doctor, here you are.
My sinus.
So anyway, doctor, the story gets worse.
Yeah.
Doctor, please.
I gotta see.
Upon returning home, Ashley went into town one day, and while not looking, poor Ashley was trampled to death by a herd of swine in a peanut festival in Guba, Mississippi.
Oh, that's tragic.
I can still see him laying there on the ground, all those pig feet walking over.
Couldn't tell Ashley's from...
No, you couldn't.
Well, how can I possibly help you, Scarlett?
Well, what have we here? How can Miss Scarlett, Beauregard Taliaferro Calhoun Stewart, possibly be helped by Dr. Andrew Kaiser Cunningham III? You won't want to miss tomorrow's exciting episode when Miss Scarlett whispers in Dr. Cunningham's ear.
Doctor, there's no way else to put it. We're broke.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tondaleo T. Thomas. Is the name? Del Tandel Productions, and come with you from Washington. Until tomorrow, ta-ta.
And now, Rosa will supply the theme and all the incidental background music. All right, Rosa Rio, if you please.
And now, the continuing true to life story, As the Worm Turns. The story of today in a big hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city living. And all brought to you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children to protect them from prickly summer heat, certain weeds and growth indigenous to the area, and air conditioning poisoning, which none of you here are suffering from. As our story opens, we find ourselves on the third floor of Big City Hospital in the office of Dr. Rodney Rialto. Dr. Rialto was a war bride from 1946. Prior to that time, he'd been in vaudeville, where he'd made people laugh with funny hats and jokes and sayings that were snappy during the 20s. But now the good doctor was helping humanity by getting off the stage one and by being a doctor. Suddenly, there's a ring at the doorbell. The door opens. Into the office steps a very charming lady, Mrs. Beatrice Terrett. Mrs. Terrett speaks to the doctor.
Doctor, I'm here to speak to you. It's about my husband, Clifton.
I assume, Mrs. Terrett, that your husband is waiting out in the outer office, eh?
My husband is waiting in the outer office, doctor, and...
Room 212. Room 212. Bedpan, please. Bedpan, please.
Doctor, my husband hasn't laughed in 40 years.
You mean to tell me that your husband hasn't laughed in 40 years?
I believe that's what I said, dum-dum. My husband hasn't laughed in 40 years.
I suggest you bring him in here at once.
Room 212. Come on, bedpan, please. Bedpan.
Doctor, I've been told that you have a way with humor, that perhaps you could bring a smile to his lips and save our marriage.
Room 212, bedpans, please.
Doctor, can you help?
I believe I can. Would you bring your husband into the office, please?
Room 212, bedpan, please.
I think you'd better investigate this, doctor. I think there's trouble in room 212.
Excuse me, is this room 212?
No, this is my office. Why?
Well, my name is Dr. Ernst Bedpan. They are paging me, and I'm trying to find room 212.
What have we here? Dr. Bedpan is indeed a doctor, and not what you thought. You won't want to miss tomorrow's thrilling episode, As the Worm Turns, when you'll hear the doctor say...
I wonder if we can make him laugh. This bit obviously did not.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tondaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from the Virginia Theater. Good night from all of us here, to all of you.
Cry Tonight with Senator Hubert Humphrey on NBC. Thank you.
And now, the continuing to the last story, As the Worm Turns. The story of Lahai today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city living. And all brought to you by Scott No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray on your children to protect them from management and other noxious growth. It's early afternoon in Big City as the sound effects comes barreling in at the hospital backgrounds. You may hear in the background perhaps someone you know and love. For each day in a big city hospital, a new drama unfolds. Nurses on the third floor have been tittering continuously for the last hour. Word is out that a big name stars in the hospital. A local radio jock of some note, a John Holliday, a fellow who does a morning show on WWDC Radio.
To see you, Mabel, he's a handsome devil.
Mr. Holliday has been signing autographs, but apparently this is not a personal appearance, but a personal reason that the young jock has come to the hospital. Quietly, the crowd disappears in the background.
Got it?
You don't say that when you're doing the drama, Mr. Engineer. Just fade it down and out completely. As we go inside the doctor's office. Cue the door. It'd be nice if the door would close and then the sound effects leave. Let's bring the sound up a little bit one more time. They go into the office and... Nice. That was real nice. They're now in the office of Dr. Arnold W. Zacharias. Dr. Zacharias is a psychologist at Big City Hospital. The nurse, Estelle Berione, greets the young jock, Mr. Holliday, as the nurse says...
Hey, come on, sit down here, Mr. Holliday.
Good morning, nurse.
How do you do? The doctor will see you now.
Nurse, I'm quite concerned.
Yes.
I'm quite concerned about our helicopter pilot, Captain Don.
Just a moment, Mr. Holliday. I am the doctor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
We're not discussing the problems with the nurse. She is just a mere bookkeeper. Now, you are having a problem?
I'm quite concerned about your nurse also, Doctor.
Yes,
as well
so
as
am I.
Captain
Don.
I'm rather concerned about the bit at this stage of the game.
You were concerned about a certain helicopter pilot. What is his name?
Yes, I am concerned about the helicopter pilot captain, Don,
sure,
who seems to have a very sensitive approach to him these days. Captain Don is, I can say and quite honestly feel, he's one of my close friends, Doctor. And something's wrong. He doesn't seem to be talking to people, doesn't seem to be getting along with people as he normally should, and thus, my visit to you today, Doctor.
Will you lie down on the couch, Mr. Holliday?
I beg your pardon?
We will discuss it at great length.
Well, what have we here? The young jock John Holliday from WWDC is now stretched out prone on the couch in the doctor's office.
Get your feet off the couch, Mr. Holliday.
You won't want to miss tomorrow's engrossing scene as the worm turns when young WWDC morning jock John Holliday says,
if for only a moment to hear his blades chopping through the sky again.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced for radio by Tondaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Bell Sandell production and comes to you from Washington. The noise in the background you heard was that of the newsman adjusting his equipment. Lord knows he needs it. Ta-ta.
It's till 4 o'clock, yeah. 10 minutes away till 4, and then we'll have news. Now, for those of you interested in the heavier side of life, it's a little drama, shall we? The cast ready, the writers are ready, producers ready, stopwatch. Time for the worm to turn.
And now, the continuing true-to-life drama as the worm turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. Joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements of big city living. Now in its 25th year, radio's sole surviving soap opera, and brought to you by Scuff No More, the magic little can with a miracle in every squirt. Gas shortage got you down? Spray a little Scuff No More in your gas tank and watch your mileage increase. Scuff No More, Henry Kissinger's favorite can. It's early afternoon in Big City General Hospital. The rays of sunshine once again crackle through the windows of this large medical edifice. The cold crispness of the day indicates that wintertime is still very much with us. On the fifth floor, young, exciting, virile intern Pete Moss has been chatting in a lonely, darkened corner with nurse Lotta Lip. You may recall yesterday, Nurse Lip said to intern Moss,
well, let's see, Pete, I'd like to, I think I'd like one of these, two of those, maybe one of those too. It's hard to make a decision, you know, there's so many of them.
While Nurse Lotta Lip and young, exciting Pete Moss, intern at Big City, were apparently selecting something from a little booklet, another nurse, Miss Patty Wagon, senior nurse on the floor, approached.
You think I could get a... Good heavens.
Hey, what are you monkeys
doing? You really ought to go on a diet, Miss Wagon.
Hey.
Look at this. We're just looking over. The doctor brought these in for me to see.
I ain't seen nothing like that since I was in the Marine.
Yeah.
What have we here? Nurse Lotta Lip and intern Pete Moss selecting something or some things from a booklet, and head nurse Patty Wagon approves. You won't want to miss tomorrow's engrossing episode on The Worm Turns when head nurse Patty Wagon says,
wowee, wow, wow, wow.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tondaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. The organist was Rita Rosa.
See, folks.
Until tomorrow, toodly doodly doo.
Wow.
Walker and Scott, the Joy Boys from WWDC at 4 minutes till 4 o'clock.
And now, the
continuing Twitter Live drama. You're fighting me in there. The Worm Turns. Radio's sole surviving soap opera now in its 25th year. And brought to you by Scuff No More, the miracle plastic spray to spray around your differential to make sure your complete engine functions totally, completely, and with full torque. Scuff No More, a miracle product of the space age. It's early afternoon in Big City General Hospital. Again on the fifth floor, a great mystery seems to shroud the entire surroundings. What indeed is going on? Why is Nurse Lotta Lip thumbing through a catalog and saying,
"Oh dear, one of those, and two of those, and three of those"?
Why is Nurse Patty Wagon saying,
"Good heavens, I ain't never seen nothing like this since I was in the Marine Corps. I'll take one of each"?
And why indeed, yesterday, did young Dr. Percy Prissy walk up and speak to the intern, Peter Moss, and say,
"Geez, this is the most fantastic thing I've ever seen"?
And today, finally, with this little group huddled in some dark corner of the hall of the fifth floor, the director of Big City General Hospital, Dr. Guy Libretto, comes up, having been told that there was a small gathering and wondering what was going on.
I've been told there's a small gathering and I'm wondering what's going on in the... Good heavens! I've been chief of staff for 40 years at this hospital. I have never seen anything like this in the hall. Come to my office immediately.
Well. What have we here? An entire grouping in the fifth floor hallway. Nurse Lotta Lip, intern Pete Moss, Nurse Patty Wagon, Dr. Percy Prissy, and now Director of Admissions, Dr. Guy Lombretto. You won't want to miss tomorrow's engrossing episode and concluding chapter on The Worm Turns when beloved Director of Admissions, Dr. Guy Lombretto, says,
"Hand me my magnifying glass. I want to get a better look at this."
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Todd Leo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandale production and comes to you from Washington. Rita Rosa at the organ.
Yes.
And your announcer saying toodly-doo until tomorrow. And now the continuing story, As the Worm Turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements of city living. And all brought to you by Scuff No More, the miracle plastic spray to spray your children to protect their little bodies from scratches, bruises, and abrasions. And that'll hold the little son of a gun for another night at least. Well, it's a fine morning. Inside on the seventh floor, next to the chemistry lab, in suite 707, sits beloved and respected Dr. Gregory Bernard Bernard, wealthy son of a parking lot czar and dedicated humanitarian. Sitting across the desk from the good doctor, wearing a tweed jacket with patches, riding jodhpurs and boots, and a jaunty little riding cap with the bill slightly askew, is Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom, the fifth Earl of Sussex. Now, it seems that Dr. Bernard and Lord Brittlebottom are about to go down to the business of whatever it is that brought Lord Brittlebottom to see the good doctor, as we hear Lord Brittlebottom say,
"Dr. Bernard, do you say Bernard or Bernard, sir?
Bernard is
I suppose you want to get
Bernard
down
Bernard.
To the business of why I'm here.
I wondered why you're here.
Actually, doctor, I don't know why I'm here, except that I'm desperate, and I hope that perhaps...
I believe the reason you're here is because you're not all there.
Doctor, I notice you keep eyeing my cap with the bill on it, the one that the announcer described so aptly in the setting of the scene. That cap with the bill on it was given to me in the city of Buffalo. It's one of the Buffalo bills, isn't
it?
Oh, I say, doctor...
That's the chemistry lab next door.
Scared me half to death, doctor.
Don't let that disturb you. They do experiments over there. Well, let's get on with it. I'm a busy man. Now, what seems to be your problem, Lord Brittlebottom?
Brittlebottom.
Yes.
I'm confused, doctor. I am very confused. I have amnesia. And I'm either one of two things.
Yes.
I am either a wealthy English lord.
Yes.
Or I'm a used car salesman.
Well, what have we here? The jauntily askewed Lord Bottlebrittam thinks he
Brittlebottom.
Is Brittlebottom thinks he is either an English lord or a used car salesman. You certainly won't want to miss tomorrow's thrilling episode when more interesting facts are revealed. Be listening when you'll hear Lord Brittlebottom say outside the door.
I can get you a wonderful deal on a used Packard. Well, how about an Edsel?
On The Worm Turns, brought to you by Scoff No More. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero, produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from our studios in Washington. Until tomorrow, ta-ta. And now the continuing story as the worm turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements of life today in big city living. And brought to you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children to protect them from scratches and abrasions. The winds have been blowing a bit outside of Big City Hospital, and the occasional twitter of a little bird is heard. Inside on the seventh floor, next to the chemistry lab, in suite 707, sits beloved and respected Dr. Gregory Bernard Bernard, wealthy son of a parking lot czar and dedicated humanitarian. Across the table from him is the famous and beloved Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom, the fifth Earl of Essex.
Sussex.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Lord Brittlebottom yesterday was perplexed as to his own identity. He said to the doctor, as we heard,
"You see, Doctor, I have amnesia, and I am either a wealthy, noble English lord or a used car salesman. Doctor, I noticed that you, upon my mentioning that I had amnesia, shut the door. Is this a case that's up your alley?"
"Yes, it's up my alley."
"I see.
And as a matter of fact, Lord Brittleburns..."
Bottom,
"I think if you'll just have a chair, I believe we can talk about it."
"Thank you. Thank you, Doctor."
"Sit right here."
"Thank you, Doctor."
"Now, let's just take a few little tests here, first of all, to find if your automatic sensory perception is working properly." This is an old association test. It's quite simple.
I've had those in school, I think.
Many, many little intimate details are revealed to us in this seemingly very simple test.
You say a word, and I give the first word that comes into my mind.
That pops into your mind.
Very good, Sam.
All right, sir. Day.
Night.
Table.
Chair.
Cat.
Dog.
Very good. Boy.
Girl.
Crater.
Crater? Doctor, did you say crater? How dare you say that word to me, Doctor?
Well, what have we here? Apparently we have struck some kind of a strange note in our conversation. In the word association game, when the good Dr. Bernard Bernard mentioned the word crater, Lord Brittlebottom flew into a rage. You won't want to be missing tomorrow's episode, or maybe you will, when you'll hear Lord Brittlebottom say...
"I apologize, Doctor. I didn't... I thought you said crater and you said nader. Good heavens."
"No, you thought he said..."
"I thought you said nader and you said crater."
Could this be a revealing fact? Nader for crater? Used car dealer? English lord? Be listening tomorrow as The Worm Turns. Written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero. Produced by Todd DeLeo, T. Thomas. This is Dennett.
Dennett Damon. I thought you said nader and you meant crater. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Ta-ta. And now the continuing story as The Worm Turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements, the ups and downs, the dreams and fears. All portrayed in big city hospital living. And all brought to you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to protect your children from scratches and bruises. We are still in the office of Dr. Gregory Bernard Berner, noted psychiatrist and humanitarian. Son of a wealthy parking lot czar who feels it's his duty in life to rectify the wrongs of a generation gone kaflooey. Across the table from the good doctor sits Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom, the fifth Earl of Essex.
Sussex.
As yesterday's story unwound, we discovered that the Lord became quite upset during the word association test when the good doctor mentioned the word crater. To which Lord Brittlebottom said,
You said crater?
How dare you say that word to me? Of all the words that you could say to me in a word association test, that is the worst word you could... I'm sorry.
But then kindly Dr. Bernard Bernard explained that he did not say nater, which apparently Lord Brittlebottom thought he did say. Instead, he said crater. Confusing the word nater for crater left a clue that perhaps the Lord actually was a used car salesman instead of being the wealthy English lord that he thought he was, since the good Lord Brittlebottom seems to be suffering from a very bad case of amnesia. As today's story opens, we find ourselves once again in the office, and having reached a bit of an impasse, the two, Dr. Bernard Bernard and Lord Brittlebottom, are trying desperately to find some clue as to the real identity of the English lord, as we hear him say...
I don't understand, Dr. Bernard. I've gotten my composure again. I apologize for that outburst, you know.
It's quite all right, and I do hope you understand that this...
good heavens, Doctor. That no wonder I'm nervous.
You see, my office is next to the chemistry lab, which is just down the hall and up your block. And as you know, when the chemistry lab conducts its various tests, every once in a while they commit a boop-boopy-doop.
I can't hear you. What did you say?
I said, oh, that's all right. Don't worry. It's not important. It's the chemistry lab next door.
Doctor.
You see, in the world... Oh, hi, nurse. How are you,
how
dear?
Do you do? Is this Mr. Brittlebottom?
Oh, this is Lord Brittlebottom.
It's Brittlebottom, nurse. Yes,
nurse
Lord
Fitzsimmons.
I have a telephone call for you, Lord Brittlebottom.
Well, we are in conference right now, nurse.
It's an urgent telephone call.
Oh, well, in that case...
It's about his commission.
His commission?
Well, what have we here? Is it possible Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom has received a commission? But wait... Could it be a commission from the Queen or from a sale of a used car? You won't want to miss tomorrow's thrilling episode as the worm turns, when you'll hear Lord Brittlebottom say,
"Do I get a title or 5%?
On the Worm Turns. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon Del Valero, produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. Until tomorrow, this is your announcer saying ta-ta. And now the continuing story as the worm turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and involvements of life in a big city today. And all brought to you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children to protect them from cuts, scratches, and abrasions. Scoff No More. The atmosphere has become electric in the office of Dr. Gregory Bernard Bernard here on the 7th floor of Big City Hospital. The office, next to the chemistry lab, is apparently alive with action in that chemistry lab. I don't know what they're doing over there. Across the table from Dr. Bernard sits Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom, the 5th Earl of Sussex, a victim of amnesia. All week now, we've been trying to find the true identity of Lord Brittlebottom. Is he indeed a wealthy English nobleman, or is he, as he suspects, a used car salesman? Let's join Dr. Bernard, the nurse, and Lord Brittlebottom once again as the phone rings.
Honey, I just answered it. That must be for you now. Would you take the call here?
Just a moment, Lord Brittlebottom. Before you take that telephone call, hand me the telephone, nurse.
Here you are, Doctor.
This is Dr. Bernard here. Would you hold on just a moment, please? I have something I want to discuss with my patient. Just hold the phone a moment.
Oh. Doctor, you put the phone in the trash. Doctor, you dropped the phone on the floor. Doctor, why don't you want me to answer
that? It's ringing again. Hold the phone just a moment, please.
Why do you not want me to answer the phone right yet?
I think this may be one of the most critical moves in your life. For on the other end of that telephone, we know that someone or something is going to happen concerning your commission.
And it would give me proof of my identity.
Now, don't count your chickens before they're laid. First of all, it's possible that the commission could be a used car commission for selling an automobile. Then, on the other hand, it's quite possible that it could be someone calling you long distance from London.
Should I take the call now, Doctor?
If you realize the consequences involved, I feel it would be wise.
No.
Drat that chemistry lab next door.
Hello? Brittlebottom here?
Yes, Your Majesty. Of course, Your Majesty. Right away, Your Majesty.
Well, what have we here? Whose voice is on the other end of that telephone? You certainly won't want to miss tomorrow's exciting, gripping episode as the worm turns, when you'll hear Lord Brittlebottom say...
And the same to you, Your Majesty.
As the worm turns. Brought to you by Scuff No More and written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero. Produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas, this is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from our studios in Washington. Until tomorrow at the same time, this is your announcer saying, ta-ta. And now, the continuing story, As the Worm Turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The ups and downs, the joys, the heartaches, and the intrigues of big city hospital life today. And all brought to you by Scuff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children and protect them from scratches and abrasions. And so it's Friday here as we come to the concluding chapter of As the Worm Turns this week. The story of the wealthy English nobleman, Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom, the 5th Earl of Essex. And the doctor, the psychiatrist, who's extremely interested in the personal advancement of the case of amnesia that Lord Ambrose Fitzsimmons Brittlebottom seems to be suffering from. And that doctor would be Dr. Gregory Bernard Bernard. As today's story opens, we find ourselves once more in a state of total shock. Dr. Bernard Bernard now speaks to the English lord.
Well, I suppose this is the moment of truth. You have spoken on the telephone, and you tell us that you have spoken with the Queen.
Yes, I have.
Have you found out, are you or are you not an English nobleman? And are you... or are you not a used car salesman?
You're not going to believe this, Doctor. But I am an English nobleman.
Well, how do you do?
But I'm also a used car salesman.
Well, no, you have me a bit perplexed. Understand that I'm extremely happy for you that you have discovered your true identity.
Yes.
But how can you be both at the same time a used car dealer and an English nobleman?
Well, as it comes back to me now, you see, I am the son of the Earl of Essex. Isn't it odd that announcer was right all week long? I kept correcting him, saying it was Sussex, and actually it was Essex.
You mean that you actually are the Earl of Essex?
Yes, yes. I'm a man of parts. Goodness knows it's hard to get parts with an old Essex. But you see, my knowledge of automobiles made me also... a member of Queenie Schwartz's staff. Yes, I work for Queen Motors, and we call her Your Majesty as an advertising gimmick. So you see, I'm both an advertising man, an English lord, and a used car salesman.
Might I just add one thing further?
Yes.
You, sir. You, sir.
Yes, sir.
You, sir.
Yes, sir.
Are a rotten actor.
Thank you, sir.
You certainly won't want to miss next week's exciting story on The Worm Turns. Our scene is the X-ray room. Handsome, swinging young X-ray technician Randy Ring-a-Ding-Ding is lining up the big city socialite Ima Jewel for her X-rays. When Ima says,
Doctor, your hands, please.
As The Worm Turns. Brought to you by Scuff No More and written for radio by Denise and Damon Del Rio, Demon and Oh, Pooey. And now, the continuing to the life story as the worm turns. The story of life today. Life today. In a big city hospital, and brought to you by Scuff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age, to spray on your little children to protect them from prickly summer heat, abrasions, chiggers, and noxious growth indigenous to the area. It's a new day in big city hospital, and the day is dawned with sunshine. A day of sunshine can do things for the human spirit that no medical man can even dream of. As today's story opens, we find ourselves on the 5th floor of Big City Hospital,
We are in the reception room of Dr. Wilfred Waddell Willinona. Dr. Willinona is a doctor of psychiatry. Willinona, yes, Willinona. Dr. Wilfred Waddell Willinona, in case you didn't get that. He's a doctor of psychiatry at Big City General. His nurse, Florence Nightenhawk, is sitting at the desk. She's waiting for the bell to ring.
Look what they've done to my song.
And singing to herself with her normal nasal quality. The doorbell has rung, Nurse Florence Nightenhawk.
Come in!
Into the office and through the door, going womp in the night, steps a Mrs. Helen B. Overshoes. Mrs. Overshoes is here to see the psychiatrist, but not because of herself. As the story opens, the nurse speaks.
You have an appointment with the doctor, ma'am?
Yes, I do. My name is Ms. Overshoes.
Ms. Overshoes?
Helen B. Overshoes.
Over. Yes, I see you have an appointment with you. You're right on time, Ms. Overshoes.
You've got a terribly nasty cold, haven't you?
Don't get smart with me. That's the way I talk all the time.
Heavens, that hurt me when you went like that. Yes, I'm here to see Dr.
You're making fun of me, aren't you?
Dr. Willinona.
Just a moment. Doctor.
Yes, nurse.
Doctor's talkback isn't working. You got a little whistle in it.
There's a Miss Overshoes out here to see you, Doctor. Mrs. Overshoes.
Very important to the plot.
I'm expecting Mrs. Overshoes. Would you send her in, please?
You can go in, please.
The doctor standing right next to the microphone? Why is he talking to that little telephone?
That's radio.
That's the radio's bag.
Go right in there. You just stand there. The sound effects may all open the door.
Oh, hey, this is wonderful. I'm a gray lady. I'm just on my day off. I came for a tour of the station. They
this is Overshoes. Get
ass.
Back to the play. Would you? This is Overshoes, I presume?
Being radio. Huh?
I see Mrs. Overshoes, I presume.
Yes, I'm Helen B. Overshoes, and I'm here to see the doctor.
Well, I'm the doctor. Now, if you'll just sit down on that couch, you can tell me all about it.
Well, what could Helen B. Overshoes' problem be? Why is she here to see Dr. Willinona in Big City General? Well, well, you won't want to miss tomorrow's thrilling episode when you'll hear Helen B. Overshoes speak to Dr. Willinona as she says,
"It's my husband, Doctor. He thinks he's a horse."
Be listening tomorrow to find out more about this gripping situation. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero. Produced by Tondaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. Until tomorrow. The continuing true to life story as the worm turns. The story of life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city living. And all brought to you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to protect your children from prickly summer heat, noxious growth, and certain chiggers indigenous to the area. All week long, we've been on the third floor of Big City Hospital. We've been in the office of the hospital psychiatrist, Dr. Wilfred Willinona. Dr. Wilfred Waddell Willinona, famed psychiatrist from the old Stuttgart Institute, doctor of psychology. His nurse, Florence Nightenhawk, ushered into the office yesterday a Mrs. Helen B. Overshoes.
Right in there, Mrs. Overshoes. Thank you.
Got a bad snort there, nurse.
Well, it seems that Mrs. Overshoes had a very personal problem indeed with her husband, Mr. Winston Overshoes. As she explained to the doctor,
"Well, doctor, it's like this. Winston thinks he is a horse."
Just a moment, Mrs. Overshoes. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say that your husband...
Winston thinks he's,
thinks he's a horse.
Yeah. Four-legged horse.
And I have heard of situations of this kind before. Now, let us try to discuss what triggered, pardon the expression, what triggered that sort of a complaint.
I still have my sense of humor, Doctor, and I can appreciate a little joke like that.
Little humor, even... On sad occasions.
Makes it all bearable when he's out there on the lawn on all fours nibbling away at the zoysia.
You mean to tell me that he actually grazes on the zoysia?
Constantly.
This is indeed.
Put outdoor lights on so he could have a snack before he went to bed.
Well, now, do you have long conversations together as most husbands and wives start the day together? At the breakfast table, in the breakfast nook, perhaps you were able to get to the bottom of the situation when you talk to him while he's eating his breakfast.
We try to talk, Doctor, but it's terribly difficult trying to understand what he's saying.
I don't quite understand. Why is it so difficult?
With his head in that oats bag.
Well, 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 well. What have we here? Mr. Overshoes, nibbling on the zoysia, keeping his head in an oats bag. You won't want to miss tomorrow's thrilling episode on The Worm Turns, but you'll hear Dr. Wilfred Waddell Willenona say...
No, Mrs. Overshoes, I don't care for a lump of sugar, or an apple, or a carrot, but thank you just
for... Be listening tomorrow for The Worm Turns and the continuing story of Big City Hospital Living. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero, produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington. Until tomorrow. Ta-ta.
And now, the continuing True to Life drama, As the Worm Turns, the story of life today. In a big city hospital, the joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city hospital living. And brought to you by Scuff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to spray your children to protect them from prickly summer heat, rash, chiggers, and weeds indigenous to the area. It is still early afternoon in Big City Hospital. We find ourselves on the third floor once again in the office of the psychiatrist, Dr. Wilfred Waddell Winonona. His nurse, Florence Nightenhawk, has ushered into the office a Mrs. Helen B. Overshoes. Mrs. Overshoes has a husband with a very unique problem, as she explained to the doctor.
My husband thinks he's a horse.
Well, the doctor, never having been confronted with this one before, was in the process of asking Mrs. Overshoes some relatively personal questions. Yesterday, we discovered that Mr. Overshoes didn't speak much at the breakfast table, Mrs. Overshoes finding it difficult to understand him because he kept his head in an oats bag during the course of the breakfast. Today, the questioning continues as we hear the doctor speak.
Well, this is one of the most unusual cases I've ever been confronted with. No, thank you. I don't care for the lump of sugar, Mrs. Overshoes.
Can I wet you down with a hose?
No, you see, I don't think
Clifford
I'm a
likes
horse.
That. Clifford,
you
likes
mean he actually likes you to hose him down?
Occasionally, every morning. After his morning romp.
I see.
Here, Clifford goes out in the garage, and I hose him down, and then give him a rub down, and usually rub some wintergreen and a little spot of ginger here and there to perk him up.
Well, it sounds as though you have a wonderful togetherness in your relationship, do you?
You have to understand that we, in our own strange way, we love each other. He calls me his filly, and I call him my stallion.
Well, how long has he felt that he was a horse?
Oh, I guess about 5 years now, Doc.
Do you recall at what point in his life he began to think?
Yes, I do. What was the question again?
I said, what time in his life did he think he was a horse?
It was just after that walk we took at Haynes Point.
I don't understand.
5 years ago.
What happened on that walk?
He made it in 2 minutes and 10 seconds, all the way around Haynes Point.
Well, what have we here? Ooh, Speedy Gonzales. Looks like Mr. Overshoes has got quite a pair of pedal extremities on him as he made it around Haynes Point in just flat 2 minutes. You won't want to miss tomorrow's exciting episode as the worm continues to squirm. Well, you'll hear Mrs. Overshoes say,
"Why, Doctor, I don't know how, I just don't know how. I just don't know how.
You've said that three times.
The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero. Produced by Todd Leo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Pimlico.
I just don't know how.
It's my line, dummy.
And now, the continuing true to life story as the worm turns. The story of life today. In a big city hospital, joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city hospital living, and brought you by Scoff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age to protect your children from prickly summer heat, pump out basements, and keep your cool. As today's story continues, once more we find ourselves on the third floor of Big City Hospital. We're in the office of the hospital psychiatrist, Dr. Wilfred Waddell Winanona, Director of Psychiatry. His nurse, the lovely Florence Nightenhawk, had ushered in about 5 hours ago into his office a Mrs. Helen D. Overshoes. Mrs. Overshoes was there to see the psychiatrist about her husband. She explained,
"My husband, doctor, thinks he's a horse."
"I do."
Well, the doctor seemed quite upset at this, having never heard of a situation quite like this, although suggesting all the elements of schizophrenia. As today's story opens, we continue the discussion in the office, and the doctor continues his line of questioning, now going into the sixth hour with Mrs. Overshoes.
Just glancing at this medical book here, trying to find the symptoms listed. Here's the horse who thinks he's a man. No. Man who thinks he's a mule. Can't seem to find anything on a man who thinks he's a horse, Mrs. Overshoes.
Well, it's Clifford's way of expressing himself, apparently, and yet it didn't bother me in the beginning till our neighbor put in a 6-foot fence.
You mean Clifford was going into the neighbor's yard?
Eating their grass.
Now, you told me before that he made Haynes Point in 2 minutes.
That's right. The first signs of real problems occurred. We took a stroll about 5 years ago down at Haynes Point, and Clifford broke out into a canter and made the entire trip around the point in 2 minutes and 30 seconds, flat.
And I've known people that would break out into a canter or a jestle or a few other impersonations at parties. Yes.
Well, no, Clifford never wore the lampshade, route, or anything like that.
But let me ask you this.
After the neighbor put the fence in, Clifford started jumping.
The fence, I see. Is your husband an even-tempered individual? Would you say he's a manic depressive?
Oh, no. He's a hard-shell Baptist.
Eh? No, you don't understand.
Very sweet, gentle man. Except during feeding time, and Halloween is a particular problem to him.
Why is that?
Little kids come in and have apples in their sack. He gets his nose down in the bag and roots out all the apples.
Well, by manic depressive, I mean, is he sometimes extremely sad, sometimes depressed to the point of not knowing what to do next?
There was one time last summer.
I see.
Clifford asked me to shoot him.
Well, what kind of... This is weird. What kind of madness have we here? Clifford asked to be shot one time last summer. I think the writer's half shot now. You won't want to miss tomorrow's exciting concluding episode when the doctor asks one more question.
I think I'd like to have a shot myself. Would you hand me the water, please?
Be listening tomorrow when the doctor belts a few and reminds Mrs. Overshoes that she's been in the office for 7 hours now. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas. This is a Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Charlestown. The continuing true to life story as the worm turns. The story of life. Life today in a big city hospital. The joys and heartaches, the intrigues and the involvements of big city living. And brought you by Stuff No More, the miracle plastic product of the space age, to spray on your children to protect them from chiggers, noxious growth, prickly summer heat, and the slight abrasions of firecrackers that go womp in the night. It is early Friday here at Big City. The concluding episode of this week's exciting story is about to unfold and conclude at the same time. All week long, we've been in the office of Dr. Wilfred Waddell Winnenona, Doctor of Psychology at Big City. The lovely nurse Florence Nightenhawk had let Mrs. Helen B. Overshoes into the office, where she'd been telling the psychiatrist for over 12 hours now about the fact that her husband thinks he is a horse. A bit of schizophrenia, it seems. But the good doctor has been very understanding and has listened very carefully. But at this time, the doctor wants to remind Mrs. Overshoes that she has been there for some 12 hours now, as we hear the doctor speak.
Just fouled up my mathematics here. I don't want to appear rude, Mrs. Overshoes, but you've been here actually some 7 hours at $35 an hour, which is my fee, which is a grand total of $325, and I...
The doctor, the announcer, said I've been here 12 hours.
I know, but I'd figured out the rate at 7, and I didn't want to mess it up anymore. The announcer...
You've been very understanding.
Well, I try to be...
No help. Like most doctors, but very
understanding. That's what bothers me. I feel that I have not been of any help to you, that we have come no further in this case.
Well, I've tried to explain that Clifford's hang-up is that he thinks he's a horse.
Madam, let me make one...
Keeps going out at night for snacks, nibbling on the zoysian, leaping over the neighbor's 6-foot fence into their yard.
Let me just say this.
Running around Haynes Point at night in 2 minutes.
In conclusion, I would suggest that you forget it. Let him think he's a horse. Save your money. I know that it's an expensive proposition, visiting doctor after doctor, when there is no guarantee of a cure.
Oh, well, don't worry yourself about that, doctor, because money is no object to Clifford and me.
Really? Why is that?
Well, he won the Preakness last year.
Well, a happy ending. Indeed, at last, a happy ending. Clifford won the Preakness. Would you give me $2 on him tomorrow? He's a charge. Goodbye, Clifford.
And
Clifford, riding off into the happy conclusion of a Friday, Big City Hospital. That was awful. You won't want to miss Monday's exciting episode on The Worm Turns. The Worm Turns is written for radio by Denise and Damon De Valero and produced by Tandaleo T. Thomas. This is the Damon Del Tandel production and comes to you from Washington.
Oh, boy.
This station, in cooperation with Public Service Broadcasting, presents the award-winning series, Master Puss Theatre, made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World. I am Alistair Crook. I am exciting, I am gorgeous, and I am perfect as the host for this highly educated program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the first part in our series of 6 parts, The Six Wives of Henry VIII. As we all know, Henry VIII was a big man. He was big in his lust for life. He was big in his physical stature. He was big in his appetite. And, as would indicate by his 6 wives, he had other habits. Henry VIII, not really a bad sort. Henry VIII, more of a spirited, spoiled child who never really grew up. As our story opens today, the first story including the life of his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. And as we all know, with his divorce, he not only severed his marital relationship, but also broke relations with Rome. And now, part one of the 6 wives of Henry VIII, Catherine of Aragon. The scene is the court.
Yes, who is it?
My lord! My lord, it's your wife, the Queen Catherine of Aragon.
She wishes to speak to you, sir.
Very good. Tell her to enter.
Very good, sir. Her Highness, the Royal Queen of England, Catherine of Aragon.
I know. I know that. I'm married to her, you idiot. Come in, Catherine.
It's just the way we did it in rehearsals.
Yes, I know, I know. Catherine, would you close the door, please?
You're out of the same way, Your Lordship.
Matter of great urgency distresses me much.
Get on with it. I got a garden party going down in the Rose Room.
You've always got a garden party or some social event.
You're a fat slob. Have you ever looked at yourself? Take a good look at yourself.
This is off the point of the issue.
Well, go ahead.
We've been married for years, and I am devoted to you. You know that. You know that I love you. I've looked at no other woman since you and I have been together. But you have not given me a son.
I gave you Mary Tudor. What do you want?
I want a son.
Well, why don't you call Hertz? I can't do anything about it. That's not my problem.
I've thought it over, Catherine, and I know it will not sit easy with Rome. The only alternative I have is for us to sever our relationship.
You mean you want a divorce? Big deal.
Yes, I want a divorce.
You think it's a big deal? You had the guy come in. His Excellency the King wants to see. I heard all that.
It's all protocol.
I knew you were going to ask me for a divorce, and I've been planning for it.
You what?
Get your divorce. Here, the papers are already signed.
Just a moment.
Wait till Rome hears about this, Big Daddy. You haven't seen the end of it all. Just
you're too anxious to have me sign. Is there someone else?
Yes, there's someone else.
There is.
There's a musician and the court players.
Irresponsible musician. Bah! What can he give you?
Been seeing each other under the balcony outside of the castle.
Is this oaf? I'd like to meet him.
I'll be glad to show him to you. Come on in here. Come on inside, sweetheart.
Well, a waterfall, a king. Good heavens, not him.
It's Lawrence, Sir Lawrence of Belk. And Sir Lawrence and I are going to go to the New World in California, and Larry's going to open up a dance hall.
That's right, Your Highness. I really love this woman. She does the polka exceedingly well. We work so well together, I've changed her name to Norma Zimmer. She'll be the lovely champagne lady, and we've named the ballroom after her.
You mean the Catherine?
No, the Aragon Ballroom. Let's go, Catherine. A one and a two.
So long, sir.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, part one of Masterful Theatre. Henry VIII and his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, having formed the Aragon Ballroom, she left the king. Tomorrow, you certainly will be interested in hearing about Anne Boleyn. The king lost his heart to her, and she lost her head to him. Until then, Alistair Crook, good day.
This is it.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Alistair Crook, and I am your host for this award-winning series, Masterpuss Theatre. Masterpuss Theatre is presented by the station in cooperation with Public Service Broadcasting. We present the series Masterpuss Theatre, made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Kitty Litter Incorporated. Today, part two in The Six Wives of Henry VIII, the story of Henry and his second wife, Anne Boleyn. As we pointed out yesterday, Henry was not really a bad person. Henry was sort of like an overgrown, spoiled big kid who had had everything go his way. With his divorce from Catherine of Aragon, he of course severed the ties between him, his throne, and Rome. Now married to Anne Boleyn, a beautiful young lady, the king had seemed quite happy. But there were dark, gray clouds on the horizon. The scene, again the court of Henry.
Yes, who is it?
It is I, sir.
the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Mm. I have news for you, sir, that I'm sure you'll be interested in.
You may enter, Chancellor. Don't I know you well enough to call you John by now? Do I have to call you Chancellor all the time?
Very good, sir. If you wish to call me John, anything you would like to call me at all, sir.
Very good. Now, what is this news of great urgency that you...
I humbly beg your pardon, your masterful worshipship.
I know. You didn't promise me a rose garden.
I can't possibly face you when I speak to you of things that concern you and England and the crown and the people.
Oh, get on with it, will you? I know that...
It pains me, sire, to speak to you of this, but... I must speak to you about the Queen.
What about the Queen?
Sir, the rumor has been around the kingdom now some time that Anne has been frivolous with her love to you, sir.
Are you insinuating that Anne Boleyn is...
I am, sir. I would not believe the stories I had heard in court until I myself, with my eyes, saw for myself the first time last evening in the bushes behind the throne room.
And what did you see last evening in the bushes behind the throne room?
Sir, I saw Anne the Queen.
Yes.
With the Duke of Gloucester.
Yes, yes.
And he said to her...
What did he say to her?
And he said to her...
What did he say? But then did they...
Yes, yes.
I must talk to the Queen. What is she? What is the Queen? Bring her here to me instantly. Bring the Queen at once.
Of course, the Chancellor fetched the Queen. And the Queen was beautiful as she entered the throne room, not knowing that what she was about to be involved in would perhaps be the end of her career.
What is it, Henry, love?
You can sit there and call me love when I have heard these terrible stories about you and the Duke of Gloucester.
What about the Duke of Gloucester? He was a guest in this house last night. I entertained him royally, I did.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's what I've heard. Come here. Do you know what the Chancellor of the Exchequer just told me that he saw?
What did he see?
He said that you and the Duke behind the garden, and that he said to you...
So what?
And then you said to him...
That I did.
And then he said to you... And then you both...
Yes. What of it, Henry? I guess I just got carried away and I lost me head for a moment, that's all.
Yes, Anne Boleyn, you have rightly said. You lost your head for a moment.
You certainly won't want to miss episode number 3. The story of Jane Seymour and Henry VIII. Jane, a lovely person. Jane, the real, true love of Henry. Until then, gentlemen, I am Alistair Crook, your host for Master Puss Theater. Master Puss Theater is made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Kitty Litter Incorporated. You may recall that yesterday on our drama, we portrayed Anne Boleyn, the young lady who married Henry and who betrayed him by her infidelity. But during her period of marriage to Henry, she did indeed deliver to him a child. She became Elizabeth I, and you know her story, a grand and glorious one indeed. There was a period where Henry, the boisterous, big, overgrown King of England, was indeed very happy and very much in love.
It was during that period when he was married to Jane Seymour, whom he loved dearly. And Jane did indeed bear the king his son, later to become Edward VI. But it was not meant to be, for Jane Seymour died at a very early age, and at this time it made the king so very unhappy.
It must be that I've done something wrong. I'm being paid back for my wicked ways. I love Jane Seymour more than any woman I have ever loved, and she gave me the one thing in life I wanted, a son. And now she's gone. What have I done?
It may seem strange, and it may seem a little odd to be sympathetic and feel sorry for the big Henry VIII. But indeed we do, for he did love Jane Seymour very much. And he went into a period of great mourning after her death. He would just sit there quietly in the castle, sobbing sometimes, depressed, looking out the window, and sometimes having at the grape.
Chancellor! Chancellor!
Yes, sir!
Fetch me another bottle of wine!
Oh, sir, I have
some. Immediately!
Yes, sir.
Just bring it here, forget the glass.
Oh, sir. Oh, great and noble king, I do love you as if you were my own brother. I hate to see you this way.
What difference does it make to England, to Rome, to anyone, to you, to me? No one cares. I have nothing left to live for. I've lost the one thing I love, Jane Seymour.
That is not true, sir. It is true, of course, you've lost Jane, but there are others. Beg your pardon, sir, but I took it upon myself to prepare a list and some pictures.
Dare you? You think that a list, a name, a common name out of a book, could substitute for the woman I love?
These are all available princesses in Europe that could be your wife, sir. Could become an English queen. Look, sir, leaf through these pages, if you will. These sketches were done by the court artist. Sir Delavankers.
Ugly.
Local joke.
She's a pig.
Yes.
Hey, hold it. Right there.
Look at this one,
right there, yes.
This is Anne of Cleves. She is of German extraction.
Sound teeth.
Sound teeth?
Yes. Looks.
Checked her oil.
Looks as though she has the makings of a queen. Fetch her to me.
And in finding Anne of Cleves, the king, when he first laid eyes on her, was heard to say,
"Oh, good heavens! I think I've been diddled."
Needless to say, the portrait Sir Delavankers made of Anne of Cleves was not exactly a truthful one, for she indeed turned out to be quite a porker. And this one, too, was divorced by Henry VIII. You certainly won't want to miss tomorrow's episode on The Six Wives of Henry VIII, as Master Puss Theater presents the story of Catherine Howard and how she met her end. Master Puss Theater is produced by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Kitty Litter Incorporated.
This is Alistair Crook, and welcome to Master Puss Theater. This station, in cooperation with the Public Service Broadcasting, presents the award-winning series Master Puss Theater, made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Catnip Growers Unanimous. During our course of time, this week, with the wives of Henry VIII. We have suffered till Catherine of Aragon, who, of course, had her own ballroom with Sir Lawrence of Welk in California. We checked Anne Boleyn's head in and then out after she delivered Elizabeth I. And, of course, yesterday we discussed the passing of the one woman that Henry really loved, Jane Seymour, who did indeed bear him the son that Henry wanted so much. The son, of course, Edward VI. Anne of Cleves, the most interesting wife belonging finally to Henry. Henry married Anne, of course, out of grief. He had checked a brochure sent to him by Wild Wives Incorporated and chose her after he'd had a 17-course Romanian dinner and 17 flagons of wine. When Anne showed up, she wasn't quite what he'd expected. The scene opens in the court. Anne, who is German, of course, waddles in.
You are Henry?
Good heavens. I think I've been diddled.
Henry! Get your feet off of the settee! Things will be different around here now!
No. You have a lot of the traits of Eva Braun.
Who is she?
She's later. I should have never picked a wife from that lousy brochure.
But of course, the marriage did not last too long because Anne was too overbearing. And Henry, being the robust, wild, debonair, gay sort that he was, could not take that. So he merely got rid of her.
And stay out!
And so we come to Catherine Howard, the fifth wife of Henry VIII. Catherine had been in the same court with Anne Boleyn, and I must confess, picked up some of her bad habits. As the scene opens, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the friend and trusted ally of Henry, approaches to tell him of the misconducts of Catherine, his fifth wife.
Oh, Master and Lord, could I have a word with you, sir?
I wish you'd try to get over that.
Sir?
Yes, you're in now. What is it?
Could you buy me some larger shorts? I'm dying here and these old ones.
Send in a requisition in triplicate.
Well, bureaucracy's finally come to England.
What is it that you want of me, Chancellor?
I hate to be the bearer of sad tidings, sir.
Do not breathe directly on me.
But your wife, the Queen Catherine Howard.
What now?
Remember Anne Boleyn back behind the bushes?
How could I forget Anne Boleyn back behind the bushes?
With the Duke of Gloucester?
Yes.
The Duke's back, sir.
You mean one more time?
No, sir. Four more times.
Where is she?
She's out in the study, sir.
Bring her to me instantly.
I'll fetch her, sir.
All right, get your hands off me. What do you want?
King wishes.
Yeah, the king wishes. Always what the king wishes. I'm sick up to here with the king. I'll tell you that right now.
I didn't need the part in the first place.
Is it true that you were seen playing patty fingers with the Duke of Gloucester? And there's some rumor that there's a little hanky-panky between you and the Prime Minister.
Yes, it's all true, Henry, me love. But remember, variety is the spice of life. Remember that, eh?
You remember that on your way out, my dear.
And indeed, Catherine was on her way out. For her brief exercise...
I didn't need the part either, really.
For her brief exercise in democracy, Catherine paid a high price. For she indeed lost her life. Gentle reminder, Master Puss Theater is produced by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and the Catnip Growers Anonymous. Tomorrow, the final chapter, Catherine Parr, the one queen who outlived Henry. Until tomorrow, Alistair Crook. Good night. Thank you. ladies and gentlemen. This is Alistair Crook, and welcome to Master Puss Theater. Master Puss Theater is made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Catnip Growers United. And so we come to the end of Henry VIII and his six wives. We have seen Henry through Catherine of Aragon, Anne Boleyn, who lost her head over romance, Jane Seymour, the one woman Henry really loved and who did bear him a son, Anne of Cleves, the German princess he married through a catalogue and got rid of her through the exit out of the back of the castle, and Catherine Howard, who was executed for misconduct. And today, the story of Catherine Parr, the one woman, the queen who did indeed outlive Henry. For those time standards, Henry lived to be quite an old man. Henry was near 60. He was in the castle that afternoon, musing to himself about the successes of his reign as King of England. The success of Phase One, Phase Two, of bringing the boys home, and going overseas and making new friends in Europe for the Queen and the King. And so he sits that final afternoon with the Queen, Catherine Parr, watching the late show. Johnny Carson, I believe it was. Let's join the scene, shall we?
Yes. In my years and reign in this kingdom, I think I've made it perfectly clear. I've tried to be a good monarch.
Yes, you have, Henry, but let's face it. Your wife, Catherine Parr, needs a younger man. Let's face it, Henry. You're not up to par.
Oh, that was a bad line.
Well, Henry, I'm going downtown to one of those singles clubs where I might find a bit of action.
Don't leave me. Catherine, don't take your love to town.
Catherine Parr, the queen, saw her Henry for the last time, even though she did not know that herself. And after Henry finally succumbed, she would then marry Seymour. Seymour, that rogue whom she had loved in earlier days. Seymour, who had chased Elizabeth I around the castle, sometimes behind the bushes. And now, Henry's alone. And his faithful friend, the Chancellor, visits for the last time.
Is that you, Chancellor?
Yes, my lord, it is I.
Chancellor, of all my subjects, you and you alone have stood by me for 45 years.
It is her.
Chancellor, hand me those papers and that plume. I must sign these important papers before I cash in.
I love her.
Help me sign these. There. That one, and that one, and that one.
This one's her.
Yes, that's the one.
This one's her.
And that one.
This one's her.
No wonder I'm worn out.
This one's her.
All of these papers to sign.
This one's her.
A king's work is never done.
This one's her. And finally, this one.
Finally, this one. Thank you.
May I ask one question, sir?
Certainly.
These papers you signed.
Yes, sir.
Are they affairs of state that will change the course of English
no.
history?
They're affairs of mine.
What are they?
Alimony checks.
Alimony.
For all of my wives.
Well, sir. Ooh,
and now that I've done that, I can see the Grim Reaper. I feel that cold, icy stare.
You're leaving us, sir.
I think this is it.
It's all right. It's all over.
Good heavens.
What's that, sir?
I saw a vision of loveliness. As though it were by the doorway.
It's my daughter, sir.
I thought it was my Emmett, your daughter.
My daughter. She's over there.
How old is she?
18, sir.
Lovely. My dear, come over here and talk to me. Let me look at you. Lovely. Help me up.
So Henry went out the way he came in. And so we come to the end of Master Puss Theater production, Henry VIII. Goodbye.